Thank you for joining us for the second part of this podcast on the NHS care of families of serving military personnel. We're working towards improving NHS care for veterans, and more practices are successfully accredited each month. As part of the Armed Forces Covenant, it is also essential to consider how NHS care might be improved for serving military families. During the first part of this podcast, with input from the Naval, Army and RAF Families Federations, we considered the unique lifestyle and highlighted many of the challenges faced by service families, with specific emphasis on health and well-being. We also considered what you can do to help service families, in line with the Armed Forces Covenant. If you missed it, do go back and listen. Today, you'll hear a personal insight to put this all into context. My guests are Isa Gill, who is from a military family, and Nigel Fraser, a GP based in Hereford with experience of caring for families and military personnel. Nigel, I'll come to you first. If you could give me a little bit more background.
My name's Nigel Fraser. I'm a GP in Hereford City in a fairly standard NHS general practice. I did spend 12 years in the army, but that was a long time ago. So I left in 2001. So since then, I've been an NHS GP partner.
Thank you, Nigel. And Isa, are you able to tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yes, I'm married to a serving army officer, and I have two children still just about at home, an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old. And we've been moving around, not excessively, but relatively. We're now stationed for our final posting.
Fantastic. Isa, the purpose of today and this podcast is really to find out more and to draw on your lived experience as a military family. I wonder if you could give us a bit of insight into that.
I think one of the frustrating things about being an armed forces family is moving around frequently and having to start all over again every time we move, whether it's for education or health or basically social issues. So we move sometimes at very short notice, so no time to investigate what's available at the next location. And we have to just start all over again with registering with a GP and maybe transferring secondary care that may be in place before we move. So that's really one of the drawbacks, I suppose, to army life.
Isa, are you able to tell us more about your personal experience of that?
My son, the 20-year-old, has a diagnosis of autism, which, if anybody knows, you get a sort of a diagnosis and a goodbye, good luck and thank you from the powers that be. And there really isn't very much ongoing care. But we have had issues with some of his side issues are anxiety and sleeplessness. He has been prescribed melatonin, which when we moved from Surrey to Wiltshire, I was told to take my son and my repeat prescription away from the new GP because it is a medication that is not approved for distribution in Wiltshire by the local PCT. Another thing is just with getting any kind of, I suppose, consultant intervention, we tried to get him seen by CAMHS because of the anxiety and sleeplessness in Surrey. We were told it was part of his condition and we should go to the National Autistic Society, but that's another matter. So when we moved to Wiltshire, he had been under children's services at Frimley Park Hospital. We moved to Wiltshire and they got us into CAMHS there, but we had one appointment. By the time we had our second, which was postponed, we had then moved and had to start all over again. So it's not just a case of getting into a queue for an operation and just finding your same place in the queue that you were at before. It's mostly the different services, and this is all in NHS England, and it's still very differing services from place to place, which has been very frustrating.
I can understand that, Isa. It sounds a bit like a postcode lottery and not really knowing what you're going to encounter when you move next.
Yes, I think if you had the time and the ability to find the information before you moved, in fact, on our move from Wiltshire to Hampshire, I then actually inquired about whether melatonin was on the approved drugs list. It was, but it wouldn't have done me any good in any case, because I didn't have any choice over where we moved. So I couldn't just say, well, I want to go back to Surrey, because that's beyond our control, really.
Of course, that must feel quite disempowering at times.
Oh, yes, very much so. Yes.
In your experience, Isa, over the years, obviously, you've got a wealth of experience of being a military family and also in some ways being
very clued up about the medical conditions that your son's faced and his medication. Have things changed or improved over the years?
I think generally communication is a little bit better. You know, I'm old enough to know the days of when you used to have to get information about a potential posting, you know, by post or go into a Hive or somewhere. I mean, the internet has made that so much easier because you can definitely Google what services are available, where your nearest hospital is. All that sort of thing is far easier than it used to be. But I think there's still the uncertainty of where exactly you might be housed. When we did move to Wiltshire, I happily told everybody we were moving to Hampshire because Royal Mail had our address down as Hampshire. I told everybody we were moving to Hampshire. That was great with Hampshire medical, you know, provision and schooling. And then we found out that 10 years before the boundary had moved and we were actually in Wiltshire. You know, I think our just lack of choice or lack of input into our location is very difficult. And I think in some cases, once you've got your support services of all sorts set up, it would be great to be able to stay there or just replicate the whole thing. And it does happen in some cases. I think when you have very specialist care, it has been, not personally, but friends have had a fantastic transition to a new location because maybe it's so specialised and so, I suppose, life-threatening that you have to get it right.
It's good to hear about those positive experiences. Nigel, just to again like to draw on your experience in looking after families of serving military personnel, I wonder if you could give us some insight into that.
Yeah, it's very interesting listening to Isa there, because we think of it as a National Health Service, but it's very much not a National Health Service. It's very run on local basis, and each local area will, of course, set its own priorities and structure its services in a different way. And that makes it challenging when you're moving around the country. And, you know, I've certainly dealt with families who've had sort of 20 moves in 22 years of service. And, you know, that's not an unusual amount of disruption. And if you imagine, if you've got health issues and if you've got complex health issues, then moving that number of times and reorganising that almost becomes a full-time job. And it perhaps shouldn't be. So, yeah, I think it's immensely difficult. I think we all as GPs have got a responsibility to try and make that as smooth as possible. And I think the key thing really is that quite often military families who are a vulnerable group don't present as such necessarily. So you're probably quite quick at picking up some other groups, but you probably do have to inquire a little bit with military families just to get that information and, you know, dig down into what the issues are.
Are there any key things, Nigel, that you notice or that might alert you to a family moving into the area that may be family of a serving military personnel?
Yeah, well, we asked the question, so I guess that's really important. So obviously there are standard NHS forms and most practices will have their own registration form. And we ask if someone's a veteran and we also ask if they are a family member of a serving person, because it does make a big difference, because knowing that information, it can explain quite a lot. We also do offer the service of people who are moving into the practice to have a consultation prior to registering, so we can try and get some services organised and liaise with specialists. So we've certainly done that in cases of complex care. And I think the Army is, in particular, is quite good at the really complicated patients because they have to have this level of integration, I think. As Isa was saying, I think if it's not quite so complicated, then that's where you can possibly fall through the net. And just being aware, I think, thinking about it, asking the question, and, you know, being aware that pressures of service life can affect families, you know, quite enormously. And there are times of operational deployment, times of separation, which are added factors. And, you know, you won't take that into consideration unless you realise that the person sitting in front of you is actually a family member of someone serving in the armed forces.
Thank you. That's really helpful, Nigel. That's a really helpful insight. Isa, would you like to comment any more on what Nigel said?
Yeah, it's very interesting, some of the things that Nigel said about asking families, and maybe as a ex-serving person himself, he might well recognise some of the things that people say that would maybe hint that they are families of service personnel. But I've never been asked in a civilian practice whether I related to anybody in the military. I know there's a read code now for veterans, and I don't suppose many serving people go to a regular GP, but nobody's ever asked me. And I think that could go some way to explaining that I'm not just a sort of feckless middle-aged woman and have not been attending all my appointments. It's just that I've moved from place to place to place and have probably missed some of the things I might have been called up for or needed to do. And that's literally being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And also the issue of moving from defence medical services provision into the NHS. Very recently, or on our last move, we moved from defence medical services. We were registered with the military practice in Tidworth. I only discovered probably 9 months into registering with a new GP that they had no previous notes for me at all. You know, I just appeared. And nobody asked the question because they may have just assumed that either we'd come from abroad or we'd been in the private healthcare provision. And it was only when I think I was trying to find out whether my son had had a meningitis vaccination going into a student life when he might have had a booster, that I discovered that neither of us, who were both with the same GP, had any records. So I spent about 3 days trying to find these. I'm still not quite sure if there are gaps in my record. And I think that just makes it a lot more tricky for anybody looking at your past history, perhaps, or just keeping on top of all the sort of regular things you need to do. A while ago, I read an article which said that people who had the same GP all their lives were probably healthier and had a better outcome than others. And I thought, hey, there's no hope for us at all. But it was slightly stating the obvious when in the past, you know, your family GP would have known that your Aunt Doris died of stomach cancer, and that could be something to look towards. I think we are slightly probably disadvantaged in that way, just by not having a past history for no particular reason. And I do think that it needs to be flagged up that we're not just moving around because we're sort of itinerant, you know, but it isn't our fault. And maybe some extra care should be taken over making sure that everybody is receiving the you know, what they need.
Thank you, Isa. I think that's really, really helpful. And you mentioned about disadvantage, and there's lots of changes in place and moving forward about the Armed Forces Covenant to try and help remove some of the disadvantages that are faced by military personnel and their families. Nigel, if I could invite you to comment on that and how that's helping Armed Forces families.
Yeah, so we signed up as a practice to the Armed Forces Covenant and we've registered as a veteran-friendly practice as well. And going through that process raised awareness. So I think really important, because actually everybody in the practice is aware that there are things that you can ask of the system for people who are families of serving personnel or who are veterans, and it opens doors. And simple things like the code for veteran will appear on all referral letters, and it will prompt people to say, well, actually, this person, if it's related to their service, would be entitled to priority. And it's really not about gaining extra priority, it's really about trying to equalise things, really, that these people who have been disadvantaged, either by moving around or by service in the armed forces, can have the same healthcare as everybody else. So yeah, I think it's really important, and I think the Armed Forces Covenant is a great vehicle to raise awareness. People can sign up to it and create a sense of purpose within the organisation.
Isa, again, really interested in your lived experience and the different experiences that you've had over the years. From your perspective, what things could we do as GPs to try and improve things for you, apart from recognising families of serving military personnel? From your perspective, what could we do to make things better?
Well, I think, as you say, Veronica, the primary thing is to identify as an armed forces family. I don't think, as I said, I've never been asked the question, even if I've sort of dropped hints, nobody really picks that up, because I don't think they understand what that means. And really, it just means that we may well be as healthy or unhealthy as the next family, but we do move around a lot more and our continuity of care may have been affected. I think it would be great to ask the question and see, just to maybe have a chat about how we feel that affects us and what we'd like to see happening. Like maybe let's go through my records, make sure I'm up to date with, or my children are particularly up to date with all their vaccinations and things. It's so easy for things to fall between two stools. And I think a little bit like Nigel said, if you have very serious health issues, nobody's going to leave you moving from one place to another and then shrug their shoulders and say, well, we don't know where you're going to have your dialysis. We weren't expecting you. Whereas if you have other issues, I think I feel a little bit bad sometimes about raising things, you know, moving into a new GP and saying, and by the way, you know, there's this, that and the other. But I think it would be nice just to have that conversation, you know, as you do with maybe a new patient. There are plenty of people you see, like the nurses or even receptionists, who take it for granted that you'll know how things are going on. But if you go from a military practice to a civilian practice, they can be very different in operation. And I think they need a bit more patience, dare I say.
And I suppose it must be quite daunting at times moving into the unknown.
It frequently is. And there's all sorts of things apart from the medical side. You know, there's the education, just the housing, the transport, you know, how you get from place to place and just finding your way around. And as I say, there is much more information available now. So you can be better prepared. But nonetheless, it's still every step that can be made easier is better for us because there's just so much to deal with all at once.
Thank you, Lisa. And Nigel, do you have sort of top tips that you might recommend for GPs who are looking after families of serving military personnel?
I think we've probably heard it from Lisa, actually. She's the expert. So I think actually it's asking the question. Don't just let it be told to you, but actually actively go out there on your registration forms, ask the question. Look at the notes when you review somebody. If there are omissions, if there's some of the national screening stuff isn't in date because it's been done in different countries, then you know, ask the question and look at those sort of things. Bear in mind about the extra stresses that moves have. You know, we recognise that a house move is one of the stressful life events. If you're doing it multiple times, it is very stressful, and particularly if you've got health issues and it's new. So I think recognising that and trying to go some way to smoothing that process through would be incredibly valuable. Recognising that people will sometimes be moving away from their sort of natural support systems is also really important. So, you know, we can take quite young families and move them away from all their relatives sometimes in the army and the armed forces. And that has implications too. So I think it's just being aware, ask the question. Sometimes service families are a little bit reluctant to disclose if their partner or the serving person is doing a secretive job within the armed forces. So providing some reassurance that actually you don't need to know anything about the details, you're just there to try and make their care as smooth as possible. That reassurance can often help. And be aware that there are other people out there. So if there are issues that you can't fix from a purely medical point of view, then quite often they're through the armed forces themselves, there are family federations, there are military charities, etc., who can provide additional support. And in the army, there are regimental resources too, which can sometimes provide considerable support. So think about some of those options.
Isa and Nigel, it's been an absolute pleasure. I want to thank you for sharing your personal perspective and experience, which offers greater insight into the world of service families. And importantly, of course, how we can work towards improving care and support for these families. You can find lots of additional material about this topic by visiting the RCGP's website at www.rcgp.org.uk/veterans.